Welcome everybody to the Too High Podcast. I am Seth Galina alongside my co-host Deontay Lee. Deontay, you can't stop winning. What's going on in high school football in San Diego?
Hey man, it's very easy to do my job when you have a player that's going to FBS program. That's kind of where I'll leave it at, you know. I don't have to be a genius. No, but it's really a credit to all the kids. They're all playing well. Thankfully, we got a bye week, you know. This is kind of the part of being a high school coach is that you've got to take a week to make sure that everybody's doing their homework. That way you don't miss out on guys for half a season. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
I'll give you guys, you might appreciate this. I don't think anyone else is going to appreciate this, but I'll give you something that happened last night in flag. They ran dagger against us. We're playing cover three. I'm playing safety, middle of the field. They ran dagger against us. And good call. Like, you don't see a lot of dagger and flag because it's like no one wants to run 10-yard ins or 12-yard ins
from
the
wide.
It's tough, right? It's tough to read it. And so dagger, for those who don't know, is a 10-yard in or like a intermediate in route from the wide out. And then this is a classic dagger. And then the slot has just a seam, just to go straight down the field seam. And then someone is running a flat route to that same side. So in this case, it's like the snapper who's eligible. So we're playing cover three, and it's a very good cover three beater because the low flat defender is going to be taken by the flat route unless he's, you know, figures it out. And then me and the corner are kind of compromised being deep, and there's that hole.
Right, with the clear, yep.
So that, I'm a smart guy. We get beat by it. I'm like, all right. When I feel it's coming, I call it plays on defense. So I'm like, all right, when I feel it's coming again, we're going to switch it up to cover two. And I will, instead of being like, usually we play cover two, I'm low in the middle, but I'll just read the eyes and I'll be in that window.
You'll take the dig, yeah.
Pick six coming. This guy's happening. Mm-hmm. Call. So I felt it. I called cover two. They called dagger. But so I'm like, oh, I see it. Let the slot run right by me. Feeling it.
Yep.
Get in the window. And instead of running dagger, he runs a post on me.
Oh no! See ya.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Bye bye.
Yeah.
Anyways, we got the win.
Yeah, they're so. running middle read on you.
Yeah, I know. Right? I got cooked. I got absolutely cooked. And we got lucky that the safety from the other side came over and made a really nice play to disrupt it. But I got cooked. And honestly, I remember that happened to me. We're getting into it now. I remember this happened to me in like. It's one of my worst plays of all time when I was playing like peewee football. I was playing safety. And the whole week, it was like, hey, every time you see the Z receiver like short motion down the line, they're running this concept. This is my DC set. They're running this concept. So we get into the game, playing against the Shattagay Raiders, and I'm like, oh, I see it.
Right.
Let me jump the shit out of it. 40-yarder over my head. So it's clearly a theme in my life.
I mean, I've been there, dude. One of my first weeks in fall camp when I was at Sac State, we were pistol. And we were like 11 and 12 personnel pistol, outside zone and a bunch of stuff. So it was really pro style. And we used to cut our split with the X to run like the scout route. So if you don't know, it's a speed out, basically like 10 yards and turn out. But it converts to a fade if it's press coverage, basically. So obviously, you know, you kind of scout your own offense in fall camp because that's part of the preparation process. So, you know, I'm feeling good as a freshman, like, hey man, the team, I want to make a play. I know I'm going to be redshirted anyways. Let me see if I can get underneath the route. And sure enough, we're on the hash, you know, college hashes, so the field is short, and I see his split is cut in. So I'm like, okay, I know the back is going to run his little flat route and they're going to run the scout behind it. I was like, all right, so I'm just going to get width to make it look like I'm going to jump the flat route, the arrow, and then I'm going to get underneath the scout. Dude, and when I say that our quarterback threw a 95-mile-per-hour fastball right over my head, I was like, oh, this is definitely not high school anymore. All that, I can play the eyes, I can sit at 3 yards and then magically turn my hips and drop back to eight to 10. It's probably not happening. So that was it. And then I got cooked a couple of times trying to do that with the current NFL player, DeAndre Carter. Me and him I used to always cover him in scout, and I used to have a really good time with talking shit to him about how I was going to lock him up, and then they would just run Texas routes on me all day. It was bad. It was really bad. DC, I love you, bro. You used to cook me.
All right, we're actually going to talk about speed outs later in the show when we get to Ohio State's offense. So it's kind of a good segue to a certain degree. But before we get into the topics that we're going to talk about, we have the Packers. So it mostly college football, but we did want to get a little bit into the big, you know, Saints-Packers game. Packers offense, what the hell happened? Yes. FSU, last play of the game. Have to talk about that.
What the hell happened?
USC, another... What the hell? That's not even, honestly, USC is not even what the hell happened. It's like, this was going to happen.
Yes.
So we'll get into that. Texas, what the hell happened? And then Ohio State's defense, what the hell happened?
What the hell happened?
Before we get into those, of course, we are, you know, sponsored. We are owned. This podcast is owned by PFF. And I believe it is the last chance to get 30% off the website. Any subscription, 30% off. Go to pff.com, insert promo code KICKOFF30, and you get all of the PFF's locked article content. That's, again, that's usually me and Deontay's stuff is locked. College football and NFL betting dashboards, which is like, honestly, I think that stuff is so good. Grade-powered projections, cover probabilities, betting values. Player grades for every single player, player prop tool, which is, that's how you make your money, plus and minus value for every NFL prop and so much more. Promo code KICKOFF30 on PFF.com for 30% off all PFF subscriptions. Okay, get into it. This was supposed to be the last dance for Green Bay and the
Aaron Rodgers era. Aaron
Rodgers era for the Packers. And they come out and they lay an absolute dud against,
oh my God,
yeah, on paper, a fucking terrible, I'm sorry, but like on paper, like a pretty bad Saints defense. Obviously, the stars are still there. Lattimore's still there, just got locked up with the contract. Marcus Williams locked up with the contract this offseason. You have Cam Jordan. Marcus Davenport had a good game, and maybe he's going to break out as like a really good player this year. And then my guy, Demario Davis in the middle. So like, there's studs, but there's also just a lack of depth. And there's certainly, you know, some, even in the starting unit, some holes there. And the Saints absolutely cooked Aaron Rodgers. So went back, watched the film. I got an article coming out on pff.com that you guys can check out. But to give you the gist of it was bad game script, first of all. Saints go down the field. Saints' second drive was 15 play yards, took off 8 minutes. Saints' third drive was 15 plays, took off 10 minutes. So that's like most of the first half. Aaron Rodgers doesn't get the ball really the whole half. So they go like, you know, I think five plays. They maybe got a first down on the first drive. Second down, I think the second drive, they don't get a first down. So, you know, but you're expecting, okay, maybe we'll get five drives in the first half. Instead, they only get two up until there's a minute left in the half. So it's really just 2.5 drives in the first half. And then you get into a spot where you're down by a couple scores and you can't run the football.
Yeah.
And we're living in a different world now. We've talked about this. Maybe 5 years ago, if you were down two scores or whatever against certain teams and against, let's say, the average of the league, you could still get into some – you could still see a defense was going to give you advantageous defenses to throw the football against.
Right.
And the Saints and Dennis Allen has, we don't talk a lot about Dennis Allen in this kind of new wave defense stuff, but he's been a too high guy for a long time.
I was going to mention it. This is not the kind of defense that works against, because Dennis Allen is perfectly comfortable getting in a dime and he'll sit in dime and play quarters and cover one with all these great coverage players. You're going to have a hard time.
So
they got just enough pass rush too. They have literally just enough pass rush to be able to live and dime when they know you're going to pass and still get after the quarterback.
Yeah, they didn't blitz at all. They didn't need to. Barely blitz. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they barely blitzed. And so they could just rely on Cam Jordan. And like I said, emerging star, hopefully, Marcus Davenport. But I think that's really the interesting thing is like, now you're in this world where, hey, you know what? Running the football is important. Because you can't get down now and just be like, okay, well we can come back by throwing the football and running play action, even though, you know, we hadn't run the football very good to start a game, but we can still get into play action because they're running cover one or they're running cover three out of base personnel, out of nickel personnel, and we can get those crosses going and stuff. And that's just not what the Saints show that they're going to give you, and what most teams, I think, going forward are going to show that they're not going to give you. And I thought the Saints had a really good game plan. Even though we didn't see the runs a lot, I think when Aaron Rodgers was in the game, they only called three run plays, and I think six total in the game. But what I saw was interesting was, hey, we're going to give you some opportunities to run the football, and we're going to play that boot hard.
Yeah.
Because they got killed on the boot last year in New Orleans. And they said, okay, defensive end, whoever it is, whether it's Davenport or Cam, you can sneak that. You can shuffle down the line a bit, but you're really attacking that quarterback. And what I thought was really interesting was the kind of backside linebacker. He was also saying, I don't need to attack this front side too much. I can chill a bit. I can deal with the bootleg. And you saw it on more than a few. I put this in the article. Four bootlegs or keepers, whatever you want to call them, off play action last night for Aaron Rodgers. He gets sacked once. He only completes one of them on a very nice counter play that the Packers ran. But really, they had nothing. And this was a guy who was the second highest graded bootleg quarterback in the league last year. And the Saints said, this is what you do best. Yes, yes, outside zone. Yeah, you're going to hit some big plays in outside zone. You have Aaron Jones. He's a really good running back, blah, blah, blah. But what you do best is create explosives off the outside zone, just like Rams do, just like the 49ers do, just like the Titans do, et cetera, et cetera. And we're just not going to give you that. We are absolutely not going to give you that. And it worked out for them. Again, game script helps because you don't have to deal with the runs that much. But they just didn't allocate a lot of resources to the run game. And you know, the Saints offense kept them off the field basically, and then you're up two scores and you're able to kind of come into some really interesting, like you said, from different personnel packages and using PJ Williams played like weak safety a lot and he was like being the robber safety, and they did some really good stuff. And then I'll finish with this, which was the interception by Marcus Williams, which I thought was, I mean, it's great safety play. He's a great safety. They're running, we've talked about this on the pod before, they're running a stump slash stubby slash stud, now that I've learned this morning what stud is, like a quarters type of coverage where it's to trips, and what you're doing is you're saying, we're going to lock down the number one receiver, either in press or off, whatever. And then we're going to play basically cover two on the inside to the number two and number three receiver, and we're going to distribute the routes that way. And the Packers had saw the Saints do this on like a second down in like the second quarter, and they saw Malcolm Jenkins say, hey, if there's an in route by number two, in this case, I think it was Lazard, I have to jump it. Like, I have to drive that route because I have no one behind me, and I have no one in front of me, really, because the Mike Demarion Davis can be compromised. So he drives it, and I think Rodgers kind of makes the wrong decision. He probably could have hit Lazard on that play. Instead, he throws it to Adams. He was thinking stuff. It's actually whatever. It's Rodgers. Like, he knows what he's doing. But he hits Adams, and they only get like 5 yards. But they went to the sideline and said, okay, if we get that look again.
Yep, next time we're going to take the post.
We're going to take the post. We're going to compromise now Malcolm Jenkins on an in route, on like a 10-yard, 12-yard in route. And then right behind his head, we're going to get inside leverage on 22 on the nickel, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, and we're going to hit the post route. Yep. And I think it was actually cooler because, like I said, he hits Davante Adams, who was to the trip side earlier. What they did is they put Davante Adams to the single receiver side and say, hey, I'm going to
– Rodgers. Thinking, right, you thinking that Williams first. Is going to see Adams and be like, okay, I've got a double. I've got to give body help on their best receiver, and then we'll take the middle of the field.
And what I thought was
that's cool. Where having a guy like Marshon Lattimore really helps.
Yeah, exactly. So what happens is you get an inside release by Davante Adams as a single receiver. And now, like, these are like the basic rules for this type of coverage, or for a lot of these quarter types of coverage. When you get an outside release, now that safety who's to the one receiver side usually can say, okay, well, I don't need to help on a fade route. So now I can look inside and help to the three receiver side. But on an inside release, Everything's open now, so now I have to stay there on the
weekend. You have to honor it. Yeah.
You have to honor it.
Honoring, yeah, you're honoring that scene.
So Davante Adams, inside release to run a corner route. You see Marcus Williams looking at Rodgers. Rodgers is looking at it, so Marcus Williams has to stay there. And the second Rodgers comes away from that and looks to throw that post like we were talking about to kind of compromise Malcolm Jenkins and throw the post over his head, Marcus Williams says, no, I'm gone.
Out of there. I'm watching the clip right now. I mean, again, we're kind of getting into the weeds of some of like the little technical stuff, but like his angle of departure, it's like teaching tape. So the angle of his body, where he's tracking to is perfect for the route that he's trying to cover. And it's hard, right? Like,
yeah,
this is like some serious safety work. He's basically on the numbers. So he's on the far numbers, goes from staring a quarterback in his face, playing flat-footed basically, to just putting his foot in the ground and climbing past midfield to get to the ball. Like, this is stuff I tell like high school kids, or I'm like, oh, you know, you're going to climb the ladder. You know, when you're poaching, you're going to look from number 3 to number 2 to number 1. You're going to keep climbing the ladder. And it looks great against a high school quarterback that can't throw the ball very hard. So when he throws the post, the ball hangs in the air like a punt, and he just gets to look over his head like a center fielder. To do that to Aaron Rodgers, that's impressive.
Yeah.
And to your point, like, everything about the design of what the Packers are trying to do is sound.
It's so good.
This is how you get the post. You put the X short. You know, you start off in empty, so you're trying to get them into a check where they're going to play 3-2 on the weak side to keep the safety over there. Then you reload it. So now you've already got the coverage now. They're just going to stick in the coverage. You know you've got split safeties, so that's another good look for you. And like you said, they had already run the look earlier, and they know that that safety is driving on the dig. So like, oh, this is the quarter's beater. You're gonna ISO the corner out on the far side with that little 5-yard in route. You're going to run a dig route with number 3, so that near safety has to drop down on it. You've got this nickel outside leveraged against the post. Like, on a whiteboard, that is the quarters beater out of That's 3-1. It is the quarters beater. Like, I see this all the time in 7-on-7. You'll see it at every level. So to see a safety be able to pick that up, knowing that Davante Adams is in single coverage, because that could have very easily have been like, oh, maybe they run a double move with Davante, and now Marcus Williams is nowhere to be found, and that can be an explosive play. Like, that's where we kind of talk about taking what you see on a whiteboard and then being able to be a great player with it. Like, it's probably my favorite turnover that I saw this week.
No, it's just a great play by Mark. It really is a great play. And you can hear it in both of our voices. Like, it's special. That is a great play from starting with Dennis Allen and then working it to the players. Like, everyone was on the same page on that one. Mm-hmm. And they get the interception. And like I said, look, if it's a closer game, obviously maybe the Packers can run the ball more. And then the Saints are saying, hey, man, geez, we got to spin down more. And then we know what happens when you spin down against Aaron Rodgers, especially in this offense. What he did last year was just phenomenal. And they didn't have to do that. So, you know, credit to Saints offense for, like, you don't go into a game saying like, hey, we're just going to – every time I've been around – a game plan meeting, and I hear, you know, we're gonna try and shorten the game. We're gonna control the clock. You know? Guess what fucking happens? You go three and out three times,
and now you're trailing 21 points. I see it happen all the time.
So like the Saints, like, not they didn't say that. I won't say they got lucky, but you can't like bank on just saying we're gonna have 2 15 play drives.
Well, to your point, the primetime game before Sunday Night Football was the Browns and the Chiefs. And that game in the first half played out almost exactly. But what's the difference? The difference is that the Chiefs don't need to run the ball to control the game because they can generate explosive plays in a way that nobody else in the league can, basically. Like, so if you watch like that the first maybe 22 minutes of the game, it felt like the Browns had the ball for almost all of it. Like, the Chiefs were able to score. But it was like, okay, 14 play drive to open the game. All right, 9 play drive with a bunch of runs. 11 play drive with a bunch of runs, you know? And it seemed like, you know, if you're just looking at the scoreboard and like some of the counting stats and the possessions and stuff like that, you would think that the Browns had a lot of control over the game. And I think that's probably why I caught a lot of flack when I was kind of poking at them about there's no point in getting your hopes up, you know, if you're playing Kansas City. Like, Kansas City either beats you or Kansas City beats Kansas City.
That's really what.
But that's why.
That's really what fan bases want to hear. Don't get
right, you know? I mean, but it's the truth, you know, and everybody, people can rationalize stuff like that however they want. But at the end of the day, when you're dealing with an offense that can say, like, if we touch the ball, we're probably going to score. If you touch the ball, you kind of got to be perfect to score, and you have to score every time you touch the ball in order to keep distance between us and winning this game. Like, that's how a game like what you're talking about between the Saints and the Packers can get away from you. It's like, all right, they didn't have a rhythm passing the ball. Now you don't have the run game to rely on to control the tempo of the game. And then in the second half, you're chasing so much that running the ball serves you no purpose. You're not going to break. You're not breaking the Saints out of playing nickel and dime at that point. They're going to stick in what they do. So that's why, you know, and I know it can sound boring to people, I'm sure, but running the ball is important for that reason, especially like early in games. I know that nobody wants to hear that, but it serves its purpose. It's an important, if you're talking about like the flow of the game, if you're not generating a ton of explosive plays in the passing game, you have to have the run game. Especially with that offense, because it generates so many explosive passes off of the threat of the run. So that's really what, you know, what it kind of boiled down to. They just cut the game just unraveled on them, honestly.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it only cut the end of that game because I was watching the Saints game, obviously. But like, yeah, it just and then obviously the punter like fumbling.
The punter not catching the snap.
You got to be perfect, like you said, and that is part of the three phases of the game.
The part about that hurts the most is that it's not like you can say, oh, if we got that punt off, we would have stopped them. I don't think that you can just guarantee that you would have stopped Kansas City's offense if you had punted the ball. No. But it does hurt. It just hurts that much more because you're really facing the fact that, like, man, we can't get away from these guys no matter what we do.
Before we get into college, I'll just put it out there because the other game that I watched for our work was the Jets and the Panthers. So I got to see two new quarterbacks. Well, at least quarterbacks on new teams for Darnold and a new quarterback in Wilson. And it's funny how, like, I was just watching the Panthers defense. And it really, it's like, it's a college defense, man.
It's such a college defense.
You know, we've probably talked about this before, but Phil Snow is a DC there. And he comes from Baylor with Matt Rhule. And they were running some of that three high safety stuff.
Three high stuff.
Which we will talk about with Arkansas soon. And it's just like they're playing a lot of soft coverage and they're rushing three a lot. Now them, because it's the NFL and because of where the NFL is going, you see a lot of more five-man defensive line fronts because that's just what everyone's doing in the NFL is running these bare fronts. But it really kind of forced a young quarterback in Zach Wilson to have to like go through his reads and do some stuff that I don't think he was really ready for, especially with a fucking terrible offensive line in front of him. So yeah, I just wanted to put that out there before we get into it. That wasn't like, I'm going to rewatch that game, which I will soon, but that was kind of what I noticed was they're just kind of daring him like, hey, corners off, throw the ball outside, but you're not going to get anything done in the middle.
Right. And then the one game that I had to, that I was watching closely on Sunday was Buffalo Pittsburgh. And you know, it's week one, so I'm not going to jump out the window with this take, but I am a little alarmed with how Buffalo's offense looked. Like, it's very easy to forget how boom or bust it is when you're coming off a year where it was all boom.
Yeah.
Like, and that's not to say it's going to be all bust this year, but clearly the margin for error is not as wide as it looked in 2020, especially because they don't have much of a committal to the run game. And on the other side of the ball, I would say, you know, if you can just watch the Steelers defense when they play, do that. When the Steelers offense is on the field, find something else to watch. It's not a good time, guys. It's not a good time.
Oh, man. You know, it would be really funny if the Steelers did the same thing where they went up, like, they started the season, like, 9-0 or 8-1 or something like that, or 10-0, and then just...
Yep.
And then
completely cratered, yeah.
Completely regresses back to the... All right, so before we get into our college football talk, which we have a lot to get through, as always, one of the sponsors for this podcast is Home Field Apparel. which, as you know, is a premium collegiate clothing brand out of Indianapolis, Indiana. Incredibly comfortable, officially licensed apparel with vintage college designs. Homefield is in the middle of Big News Saturday Season 2, where they launch a new school collection every Saturday at noon Eastern for 16 straight weeks. So we just saw Georgia, North Carolina, Florida. And this Saturday, they will be releasing another one. So go to homefieldapparel.com, use PFF, use promo code PFF to get 15% off your first purchase. That's promo code PFF to get 15% off your first purchase. So you can go and tailgate and look cool. I saw a tweet by my friend Podcat, who said that there was a lot of Homefield apparel at the LSU game last night. The same, apparently the same shirt that I have. So again, promo code PFF, go to homefieldapparel.com. Okay. Florida State. It was bad. First of all, we know Florida State's bad, but we were excited because they played it close with Notre Dame to start the season. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, and they probably could have won that game if it wasn't for some weird kicking at the end.
I thought that they were actually the better team.
There you go. And Notre Dame might not be. Notre Dame kept it close.
I was going to say, I don't know how much of a compliment that is right now, but.
So then they get Jacksonville State, who they had last year. So they had tape on them. And boy, they blew it. They blew it. So after, so they allow a Hail Mary for a touchdown on the last play of the game. There were 6 seconds left and the ball was snapped. I believe the ball was on Jacksonville State's own 40, own 35. I'll say
somewhere between like the 35 and the 40, if I remember right.
And they allow a touchdown. One man wasn't a Hail Mary per se. I mean, it was one deep guy and they allowed a touchdown. They kind of broke a tackle and he scored a touchdown. And then in the post-game interview, Mike Norvell said, well, we played two men, but we couldn't get a communicator or something like that. And I'm not saying, I don't want to say like Mark Norvell was like lying.
I would say, I don't want to call a coach a liar.
No, because there's a lot of stuff that goes on.
It's completely possible that his defensive coordinator, that he told his defensive coordinator, hey, what do we want here? And he says, oh, I think I'm thinking about two men. And that might have been the last communication that he had with the defensive coordinator. And it did look, and I'm sure looking at the field, there was two deep safeties before the snap, you know. So I'm sure Norvell thought all the way up until the ball was in the air that he got the look that he thought he was in, that he thought he asked for. But you know, you and I were kind of talking about this, so I'm going to go on a little bit of a defense.
Well, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. You can set it up.
What actually happened.
Yeah, go ahead.
Which was they ended up spinning. They played with two high safeties, and then when the ball was snapped, they ended up spinning to cover one man-to-man. With the safety who spun down being like a robber type of extra player, let's say. And that meant they had one-on-one on the outside. And that's where Jacksonville State threw the ball. And they got a completion. And the safety was in the middle of the field, but he couldn't get there in time. And he broke a tackle and he was in the end zone. And so that's what happened. And Deontay, you can get into your rant. It's bad. It's really bad.
So, again, I do want to preface this by saying that I don't think that Norvell is a liar. But all I can go off of is what they play. So, it was a wrong call for a multitude of reasons. Playing cover one with the safety rolling down into the hole is wrong for a multitude of reasons. And I'll lay out why. Like, it's not just the wrong call because the receiver caught the ball and scored a touchdown. Right? We can all play Monday morning quarterback with that. But from a situational perspective, there's 6 seconds left on the clock. So, if you just think about it in terms of
it was clock is stopped, pass.
Clock is stopped, and they're not in field goal range. That's an important thing. They're not in field goal range, and a first down does not get them into field goal range. So that's
the first
an important
down ends
thing.
The game. Like the first, 6 seconds.
I was
left.
Just going to say there's 6 seconds left, so they can't throw the ball in the middle of the field because from the snap to the point of a guy getting to the sticks, the ball being thrown to the guy, even if he caught the ball sitting on his ass, there's maybe a second left. And you still got to clock the ball or run a play. That's basically an impossible scenario, right? Like you might get the snap off, but you're not going to get the play call in. Then, you know, you can always just send a whole bunch of guys after them. The offensive line is probably not going to be set. There's no protection set. We've seen situations like that. Guys try to sprint on the line with 2 seconds left and run a Hail Mary. And it's always chaos, right? Yeah. You barely even get the snap off. So from that perspective, you know that they can't complete the ball in the middle of the field. So for that reason alone, playing cover one is wrong. You don't need to protect the middle of the field in the end of game scenario.
Right, which is number where that robber ends up being doing nothing.
Exactly. Number two, you also don't have to protect the sidelines in this scenario for the same reason. A first down does not put you in field goal range. A first down doesn't put you in easier striking distance for a touchdown. The ball that he threw that lost them the game, it dropped dead at like the 15, 20-yard line. It's not like the guy had some cannon of an arm. You know, that was all that he had, and it fell multiple yards short, and the receiver basically had to come back to the ball. It's not like, you know, some perfectly placed deal. So, again, wrong call for the situation. And me and you were kind of talking about, like, this is where it becomes important for you to talk about end-of-game scenarios and why it is that you can't just call some man call because that's what you like to call when you know the offense is passing. Like, it's bad on so many levels. It's bad on so many levels. And to me, it was almost more frustrating to see Norvell in the post game be like, oh, well, I thought we were going to run this, or we tried to do this and that. Like, no, that's not a we tried to type of situation, you know? You run the shit or you don't, you know? That's all it comes down to. This is Jacksonville State we're talking about. You shouldn't be in the situation to begin with, but if you're faced with an end-of-game scenario against a team you know you're better than, you got to have some end-of-game scenario thing. This isn't even a unique situation, to be clear. Like, this is not a unique situation. Hey, 8 seconds left. Ball is stopped. Timeout doesn't save them. Field goal, they can't get in field goal range. They have to get a touchdown. These are the two calls. We want to play max coverage or max pressure. You can do one or the other, but you can't play cover one like it's just some regular down.
And it's like, I don't understand what whoever's calling the plays on defense, like, you have a play call sheet for a reason. Like, you put on your play call sheet, every person's play call sheet is not just a list of plays. It is all done situationally, from first and 10 to 2 minute to red zone to coming out. Like, it's all situational. Now, you can have stuff that carries over for sure, but it's all done situationally, and that's the offense and defense. So for you to, like, either you weren't like prepared, or you weren't looking at your sheet and you just said, I'm gonna call a play that I think I liked because maybe we had run it well the whole game. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that on whoever the defense coordinator's play call sheet had end of game scenario, and it said, because you know the funny thing is, Norvell said they like botched a two man call or something. Two man would have been great. They would have gotten the game would have been over.
They called two man. The game would have been over. Nothing would have been open. He would have forced the ball down the sideline. Even if he completes it, you have another guy to make the tackle. Clock runs out. You win the game.
Dude, even if they spun, the opposite safety,
I was going to say, game if, they over. Spun, if they spun the right way, not the right way, but if they spun the opposite way, the safety's already on the hash, where the ball is going. You could actually maybe get in position to contest the throw.
But like, just to not be... I don't want to say like we don't want to say like first that Norvell is lying, because there's so much communication that goes on through the game. So I'm not saying that. And then B, I don't want to say like that you're unprepared, but it just seems crazy to me that you don't just go look on your play call sheet and it says, you know, max prevent, whatever you call it, right. Hail Mary defense, or two men, like whatever. Maybe you just have two men in there. I don't know.
My thing is always like, dude, I don't know, and I don't know why defensive coaches don't do this. Just call timeout. Call timeout. Hey, remember when we did this in practice 12 of fall camp? This is the one scenario where we're going to do this. Even if you got to make up some junk defense. Hey, all four DBs, go stand at the 30-yard line. All three backers, go stand at midfield. You know, reroute the route and then just sit underneath it. I don't care. We'll run some kind of twist up front. I don't care. You can rush like, two and drop nine. It doesn't matter. It's the end of the game.
Just don't call a regular defense.
Exactly.
And especially that defense.
That defense. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. That's not calling him a liar, but based on the result, I don't know what the thought process would have even been. How do you miscommunicate two man at the end of the scenario to actually be one cover one robber?
I'll add to this, because everyone on that defense is playing cover one robber. It's not that one guy made a mistake.
Right. Exactly.
The safeties spin. So like the safety that's coming down on the robber, the other safety is replacing him in the middle of the field. So like the safeties are doing
Clearly, they got the call. They got a call that told them to run one robber.
The corners and the nickel and whoever's out there are not in trail. No. They are on top of the receivers. They're playing
the corner on the single receiver side is playing the way you would play cover one on the single receiver side.
There's the one where the backer doesn't run with the running back. He probably has in man coverage, but maybe he's just like, hey, well, why do I need to run?
I figure that he's being a smart football player and saying, exactly. Yeah, why would I cover that if there's 6 seconds left?
But everyone is playing cover one, so it was a communication bust from like the play calling because everyone got the play call in. They got the play call in. It was just like one of the worst decisions to call that play.
Yeah. That's one of those scenarios, you know, there are certain coachisms where you say, if all 11 players are wrong, we're all right. This is one of those situations where, no, if everybody's wrong, you're wrong and you lose the game.
All right. I've sufficiently riled up the defensive coordinator, Deonte Lee, enough that we can talk about USC, who...
Yep. And, you know, you want to know what's great, guys? I've done this for so many weeks on end that I'm forfeiting... me complaining about USC's offense. I'm going to hand the floor.
I'll do that later. Don't worry.
Yeah, I'm going to hand the floor over to Seth when it's time for him to talk about this offense and the air raid and what it isn't and what it is. But what I did want to watch, because I've spent a lot of time talking about how happy I've been with Todd Orlando defensively, I did want to watch and see how it is that they got 42 points put up on them.
One was a pick six.
Seven of them is a pick six, so... You know, but 35 is still 35 to a team that, you know, had to go to the absolute end, you know, with Kansas State. So it was definitely concerning still. And basically, like, it wasn't anything special from what I looked at. Like, it was a lot of multiple tight end sets running inside and outside zone.
I wonder what team they're playing against.
Right, you know. That's all. To me, that is the frustrating part is, like, it's not like Stanford broke out a new offense for this. You could have taken 2021 – all the way back to 2012, you know, and it would have been basically the exact same game plan.
There's one year, I remember writing this because I wrote this in the preview guide. I looked this up. But there's one year, I think it's like 2018 or 2019, where Stanford decided, hey, we're going to be more of like a zone team.
Oh, really, when they do like, that
fake we're going to be like Iowa stuff. For a second. And then it was like, nah.
No, not going to do that. Yeah, not going to do that. So that part was kind of odd. They had some issues with like setting the edge and fitting gaps properly. But, you know, I mean, again, this is Stanford and I've watched it happen because I'm, you know, obviously the Pac-12 was right in front of my face. So I've seen teams that Stanford is not better than just not be able to stop this stuff. You know, sometimes you get reached. You know, there was a long touchdown run. The first touchdown of the game was they just ran zone and the defensive end who's supposed to be in the C gap got reached by the tackle.
Happened.
Linebacker went to go fit the B gap that he thought was his job, and all of a sudden it's Nick Figueroa standing in his gap, you know? So those types of things happen. But the real issue to me from Orlando's perspective was, and I understand how this happens by game plan, you're trying to load the box. You're playing cover one. You're playing cover three. You know, they got a bunch of tight ends on the field. You just want to have the box loaded. So what does that do? That leaves you one-on-one on the perimeter. And it was just like third down after third down, second and eight after second and eight, where they're just picking out like, okay, here's a corner that we want to throw at. We're just going to throw the back shoulder. And you can't do anything about it because they always recruit 6'5" wide receiver tight end bodies, you know, and they're just playing jump balls out there anyways. And it's easy. Again, it's easy for, oh, man, they only gained 2 yards on first down. They only gained 1 yard on second down. It's third and seven. We're playing good defense. Oh, they just gained 14. On a back shoulder. And it was a lot of that. You know, like if you go back and look at Tanner McKee, in general, you'll say that he had a good game because it wasn't awful. But if you look at the production, you know, and some of the throws, like there's not a lot to walk away impressed with. He was fine. He did what he was asked to do. Hey, if it's single high, we got a 6'5 guy out there. Their corner 6'1. We're not asking him to go run a 4'3. Their corner runs a 4'3, but he can't be, you know, we can't run a 4'3, but he can't be 6'5. So throw the ball up, you know, and they lost a bunch of those jump ball situations. And then again, you know, just like you were talking about with the Saints-Packers game, like that happens often enough, you lose control of the game. And I'm going to hand it off to you for why it becomes a really big issue with the offense that USC is running when you don't have control over the flow of the game.
Well, and again, it's just like they had done some good stuff. You know, we talked about this last week where it's like, hey, you know, they're running the air raid, which means you're going to get in 2x2, 3x1 open with some speedier players and rather than bigger bodies. And even the tight ends aren't like big, burly tight ends. And that you can split them out and you can still be in like 12 personnel, but really you're in 10 personnel, like almost to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And so we talked about that, and they actually ran the ball well when they put in a tight end on the field. Not just on the field, but in the box, like in the core. And they ran the ball pretty well. In fact, honestly, they kind of ran the ball pretty well, even from spread sets. They had some nice runs on outside zone and stuff. But, you know, one of the issues is always going to be the same. It's like you're going to get a lot of drop zone. You know, in drop 8, drop 7 zone, just everyone's going to be filling deeper, intermediate, and they're going to force you to throw the ball short. And when your run pass, because your run pass bits aren't balanced enough. And, you know, I said this to you before, but it's like they don't have a good play action game. Of course, if you're not going to be a play action team, you're not going to have a developed play action attack. But it's like,
exactly.
Sometimes you're going to need it, man.
Yeah. This would have been a great game when you're averaging 6-7 yards.
Yeah, they ran the ball well.
If your team's going to play soft zone, you want to know how you open up those areas. You make the underneath zone defenders have to come honor their gaps and then throw over their heads. I hope I'm not breaking news to anybody with football here. I mean, you would think, you know, they're really what we're learning, you know, and I think we're going to get to, this is a common theme for me when we get to the Ohio State game, the idea that you only have to be good at one thing and be consistently successful in football. Those days are dying.
Yeah.
Those days are dying. The best programs in college football, some of them at least, because like I said, when we talk about Ohio State, we'll talk about how they're not this way. I think most people are starting to embrace that, like, you don't have to be 100% of anything. You don't got to be 100% air raid. You can take what you like. You don't got to be 100% triple option. Coastal Carolina takes what they like.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like you don't have to lean 100% into things. There are certain systems that work relatively well that are really only looking to do a couple of things. You know, we talk about Texas and Arkansas, you know, they have a Briles over there and they lean heavily into the things that they do. And, you know, for whatever reason, it's still working now. Well, I mean, it's not for whatever reason. We've talked a lot about why it is successful, but that's really maybe the only system I can think of. And even then, we're not really talking about those offenses being like contending level offenses, right? It's just like, this can get you through if you're not typically good at offense. This is something that you can kind of add water to as long as you have the speed and the size for it. But really, I mean, like, I'm at my end with USC because I'm like, how long are we going to continue to watch an offense that's really only committed to doing one thing? And even within that one thing being the passing game, I thought the idea of the air raid is that you're attacking every blade of grass. It's not what's happening right now. We're basically just spreading. We're spreading the field to throw checkdowns. Well, I hate saying we, but that's basically all that's happening.
And I think, you know, thought Slovis was the guy. He might not be the guy. He's a good college quarterback, and it's like
he's perfect for the air raid. Let me say that. Like his skill set is perfect for the air raid. The Slovis is very rarely going to make a mental mistake.
Yeah.
Like, it fits him. Even the pick six. I mean, the pick six, it goes through Drake London's hands. Yeah. 90 times out of 100, that's probably a reception. But that one time, you know, you kind of have to, you know, eat crap on that. But, yeah, I think that when we're talking about, like, Slovis and this air raid offense, you know, like, I don't think that either of them are it. Like, it's just not it.
When the air raid works, turns out, you need a special quarterback. Like former Too High podcast guest, Nevada quarterback Carson Strong, who is like fucking good. And like now it's like, oh, he can make these anticipation throws. He can make all these throws down the field. And now you're defending every blade of grass.
Because I was going to say, and when we talked, one of the things that we talked to him about both on and off the air was saying like an impressive piece of his game is that he has an understanding of, hey, maybe the right decision is to throw the flat. But I know I've got to make this defense honor the post. I've got to make them honor the seam. I have to make them honor the fade. You can always come back to the other stuff underneath.
Yeah.
But what Carson Strong does with saying, you know what, if it's one-on-one, I'm just going to take the one-on-one. And if we lose, we lose. But you got to know that the second that you slip, we're going to burn you. You know, like that's, it's an important piece of any offense. It's not enough to just be like, oh, we're going to be 100% efficient all the time and never make the wrong decision. Like, it's cool when you're always in control of the football game. But when something like this happens, like what happened on Saturday, you got to have a much deeper toolbox than what USC had.
It's just not enough. All right, let's move on to the SEC, I guess SEC versus SEC, future SEC battle. Right. Arkansas getting the huge upset win against Texas. And, you know, it's funny, we're talking shit about so many like offensive schemes and stuff. We're not going to do that with Sark because we like right. Sark. And mm-hmm. when you kind of put a tape on, it's like Texas just, it's crazy. Like, they're not... They don't have enough good players. Like, I don't know what else to say.
We're going to sound like we're making excuses for Sark, but you would have to turn on the tape to watch. They don't have the guys right now. It's literally not for a lack of effort. Like, you can pull up all the different formations that they ran, all the different run schemes that they ran, all the different routes that they targeted. Sark is trying to put the ball wherever he can to find success. They just don't got the dudes right now. Like, Card, perfectly okay quarterback. Not special enough.
No. Nope.
In a game like that, he's not special enough to win.
Bijan
Robinson is spent like
Bijan. Bijan can play.
He's a special running back to me, you know. But you can't always ask your running back to be able to create everything
every time. You know, the offensive line is just not good enough right now.
It's not it.
Not good enough.
It's not it. In Arkansas, you know, it's a sad state of affairs when Arkansas can basically just live in three down front and dominate you up front, and that's basically
three down front. And not like a three, like an old school 3-4, which is really a 5-2. Like
no, it's three. Basically like a, it's almost like a 3-3 stack, basically. Dude, with three high safeties.
Fuck. Dominated.
It was sad.
It was sad. Good, man.
I don't like to see Texas. I don't love Texas at all, but I don't like to see Texas like that. That was not what I expected. And it was really disappointing because you can kind of see, and this is something you'll see in football if you watch from a defensive lens, when a defense realizes like, oh, they can't punish us down the field. And then they really start sitting hard on routes. They really start sitting hard on the running game. And it was like, okay, the space that was there in the first quarter and a half of the game, all of a sudden it's not there anymore. Like, you can't even complete the screens for easy yardage anymore because nobody thinks that you're actually pushing the ball down the field because nobody's getting open anyways. So that was a shock. I was very impressed. And, you know, you want to give a little bit of credit to Arkansas. Like,
they look like, all of a sudden.
I'm just saying, they're a real SEC team right now. They're not like an SEC title team, but they're a real SEC team.
They would look interesting in the SEC East.
Yes.
They'd be like, oh, is Mizzou good? Oh, is Kentucky good? Oh, is Arkansas? Mm-hmm. Can they make can they get a win here? Can they get a
right, exactly.
Win
here? Could they sneak a Georgia? Could they sneak a Florida?
Not in the
That's
West.
That's the kind of – yeah, no.
Not in the West.
I mean, yeah. That's not happening. Sorry, guys. I think you can beat maybe the Mississippi schools, but
yeah,
you know, and maybe Auburn, because I don't like where Auburn's at right now, but I don't think that it's not like they're ever going to contend in the West.
LSU's not good, so
I was going to say, maybe you get LSU too, you know?
So, we talked about this. I don't remember with who at this point. We were talking about this type of stuff a lot, though, but when you're playing against this three high safety defense that's going to drop eight, what are the answers? It's tough to just run your plays. It's tough right. to just be like, hey, we're going to run these plays that are tried and tested for the past 25 years of passing offense because the space just isn't there. And I thought Sark did a good job of calling these deeper concepts and especially mm-hmm. deeper kind of double move concepts.
Yes.
Even though they weren't like that. Like, I wouldn't say they're like sharp double, like a stop and go, but it's like a deep bend and then he comes back the other way and that type of stuff. And they got behind the defense because now
you're times
and every single time, man, drop ball, overthrow,
exactly. underthrow, you know,
and it's like
place pass.
And it just goes back to the same thing. Like the players were just not there right now I don't know how they're going to look this season, Texas, but that was really bad. Like, again, Arkansas might be a really interesting, like solid program right now. Even coming off of what was horrific end to the Chad Morris era, but like
Texas. I mean, clearly Sam Pittman clearly has a pretty good idea of how he wanted to build his program. Like, they don't look bad.
Nope.
It's not like I watched that saying like, oh, Texas ought to be ashamed of themselves. Like, no, I mean, you should be sad that you got your ass kicked by an unranked team, but Arkansas just ate your run-of-the-mill unranked team, in my opinion. they're actually good. You know, I don't want to say good, but they're competitive. They're really competitive.
All right, it's time. It's time to talk about Ohio State.
Yeah.
Before we do, though, Ohio State is going through, after their loss to Oregon, they're going through uncertain times. And in these uncertain times, life is full of questions. Like, when should I start thinking about life insurance? But however difficult these questions may be, Western and Southern can help you answer them. Backed by over 130 years of experience, together we can look ahead to leave the unknown behind. Western and Southern Financial Group, life insurance, retirements, and investments, compensated endorser, products issued by member companies of Western and Southern Financial Group, Cincinnati, Ohio. I hope you like that one, Nick. Ohio State, they got exposed. Yeah. And, you know, look, we're not anti, I don't know, I shouldn't say that. Like, I don't know, you take it, you take it. I can't even, I don't have, I have so many thoughts with this.
I mean, so again, I'm going to circle back to the point I just made about USC's offense. The idea that you only have to be good at one thing to be successful is a dying concept. And what you're seeing, like what I saw when I turned on the tape was not, I mean, Jarrell Moorhead is a good play caller. Yes.
Yep.
But it's not like they made him work very hard. You know, like it wasn't something where I was like, man, every time Ohio State had an answer, Moorhead dialed something brand new up that you couldn't have possibly expected. That wasn't what it was. Like, it was very much like, oh, day one install type of offense. Like, we're going to run split zone, run power and counter. We're going to get into 2x2 to run high, low, and inside, outside, like these vertical and horizontal stretches where you're basically running smash concepts and spacing, which is basically like slant flat or double hitches almost. And then, you know, if it's 3x1, we're just going to go 3x1 and try to throw the ball to the X on the single receiver side. That's all it was in the passing game. And in the running game, it was, we're going to go trips and we're going to run to the short side of the field.
Every like, fucking play.
Every time. Again, it's not revolutionary. Split zone, power and counter. Split zone, power and counter. You know, and then maybe they throw in a little buck sweep, you know, when they really wanted to like get pin pull instead of running outside zone, but it was nothing mind blowing. But when you tell, if you give an offensive coordinator and say, hey, here are the plays that we can't defend very well based on how we align, and we're probably not going to ever adjust. If you beat us on it, we're just going to shrug it off and keep, you know, we're going to do what we do. We got to do what we do. Be who you are, you know. Eventually, you will get blown up doing that.
So, you know, one of the things that I saw, so like I said, first of all, they just went to the short side of the field every snap. And every even like you said, even just like throwing to the X receiver on a jump ball, And even the times when Anthony Brown, the quarterback for Oregon, would throw to the wide side, a lot of those were him looking short side, like, ah, oh, maybe I don't like it, I'm coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, everything
my receiver got the shit pressed out of him. I guess I can't throw it to him anymore.
everything started to the boundary, whether it was in the passing game or the running game. And like, it's tough because this is what Ohio State does. They're going to live in single high, and that means in these kind of so-called unbalanced formations, which means 3x1. And what Moorhead did a lot, what Oregon did a lot, was go 4x0.
4x0.
Super unbalanced. And you can do that with the college football rules. I don't think you can do that in the NFL, but like super unbalanced. And then kind of run it. So we're going to put all four eligible, well, kind of eligible receivers to the wide side, and we're going to run it back to the weak side, because basically what happens when you're against these unbalanced formations is when you're playing cover three or cover one, you're spinning to the passing strength, to the more receivers are, you're covering up there, but you're exposed weak, and you have to make that decision. So you see a lot of teams that go unbalanced, teams against them have to make that decision. If you stay in too high and you leave the corner and a safety at like 10 yards, 8 yards to the weak side, oh, okay, wait a minute. We can deal with this. Now you're exposed to the field side, but maybe, hey, you know, like
there's you can probably live. And the cheat to it is that when you go 4x0, one of the wide receivers have to be covered, so you don't actually have five eligible downfield threats. And really, like why it's an issue, you know, to build on what you're saying about why it's an issue for what Ohio State wants to do, is that cover three as a defense is not built to be cut in half between how you want to play the run and how you want to play the pass. And that's what unbalanced is really doing. It's saying, hey, we're going to put everybody, all of our receiving threats are going to one side, and everything we want to do in the box from a run game perspective is happening completely divorced from that. Cover three is kind of built to deal with offenses that think balanced the way that a defense would think balanced. So when you get unbalanced, you have to start making these different decisions. And you could kind of see the wheels spinning for Ohio State a couple of times. They tried to say, hey, we're just going to play soft cover three zone. Both our corners are going to stay in a deep third. We'll keep a middle of field safety standing right in the middle of the field, and we'll just go one for one, almost like you're playing cover one. And
yeah.
And then you're just out of numbers at a certain point. The more gaps that they create weak, the less bodies you have to fit them, and that started hurting them. So then they started doing this weird thing where the middle of field safety was rotating down over one of the receivers, and then the corner, I guess, was the middle of field player, but he also has like to fit a gap because it's unbalanced, and that's how you get that long CJ Verdell run where he just cuts up the middle of the field and nobody's home, and it puts a lot of stress on the backers. Like there's so many rules to having to deal with things like unbalanced out of cover three. One of the reasons why a lot of cover three guys will start thinking about breaking out of this stuff, or if you think about like Nick Saban, who was kind of built as a cover three guy to start with, and you talk about Ripley's match and all that stuff. Anybody who's looked through one of his alleged playbooks, you'll see that there are a ton of checks anytime an offense gets into an unbalanced set, and it's for that reason, because you don't want to be caught in cover three trying to cut your defense in half. Basically, it's not, you don't think pass first, run first in cover three. You're thinking about, we're going to cover everything is the idea. It does not prepare you to deal with unbalance in an offense, and that's how they got taken advantage of so easily.
Something I thought was interesting, you talk about the CJ Verdell 70-yard touchdown run right up the gut, was, you know, they're playing man on that play, which again, cover three, cover one,
I mean, it's very similar. Yeah.
But one of the things, and you can explain it to me because I don't really know it enough, but like how your run fits have to be, like there's different run fits for, yeah, like especially for the, yeah, linebackers when we're talking about cover one, in you're in man versus being in zone. And you saw it on the first play. Remember the second play of the game when they went by four by zero, QB split zone with the RPO bubble, where, yep, dude,
I mean, guys are chasing their tails
because he's like, oh, I got the tight end, but then the running back came on. They didn't flip. They didn't switch it. So it's like, maybe you can explain like how you have to change your fits. And I'm assuming I'm wrong. I could be wrong, but I'm assuming you pretty much have to funnel people and say,
basically,
it's not that I have. Yes, we're in man. But in the box with a tight end and a running back or a fullback or whatever, I'm not just straight on my man. I have to funnel. Like us two inside linebackers and maybe a down safety are saying, the three of us have these two in man, depending on who, yes, comes out to which side. And I think that's what fucked them hard on the Verdell touchdown run, because the mic just ran to the sideline.
Yeah, because he's just chasing the splitter that's running across the field, running across the formation. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, to your point, like, as a coach, like, I hate using this terminology, so please, guys, excuse me. But as a coach, when I talk to my players about it, what I say when I explain it is, like, think like it's stacked receivers out on the perimeter and we're playing cover two on these guys on the inside, or you're playing like a version of two man, or like inside out, or you're banjoing, whatever terminology people are familiar with. But yeah, to your point, it's a funnel. Like you're basically playing like, oh, I've got the first out this way, I've got the second out this way, I've got the first out that way. If it doesn't come my way, then I'm playing the hole. If it's a run, now I'm the cutback player in the hole. That's how it's supposed to fit. And you know, I don't know how they have the rule set up, so I can only be left to assume. But on that Verdell touchdown run in particular, it's hard to understand what the intended goal was, because the corner, who I'm guessing they're just using to be in the center of the formation, he's kind of tilted in a way that makes me think that he's part of the run fit. Like he's standing on the edge of the formation. So I'm like, okay, if he's a force player and he's in the run fit, that's fine. Then he just has to be in the run fit. You would basically be playing like a 4-4 in the box. And the funny thing is, if they would have just played a 4-4 in the box, they probably would have fit the run perfectly fine.
Well, but they weren't going to do it because we made fun of them for playing a 4-4 against
4-4 and getting Tough Borland absolutely fried up the seam. But that's the funny thing about it is that if they would have just done that, now you have a force player, so you have a guy on the edge of either formation, and now both the backers on the inside can play slow. And it, you bang, just like that, you've got all your zone power counter stuff fit up. So I don't understand why there was no adjustment. I fall short of being a shill for any one particular program, but I know, again, in my learning defensively, this is one of the reasons why, like, when I learned cover three, I also wanted to go and learn what TCU does, because the TCU stuff with all the robber coverage and all that stuff, that is actually built to deal with unbalanced very well. You know, I know people who follow TCU will tell you that defense was really kind of built to deal with, like, the option in the pro offense, in the pro style offense. So it deals with things like creating all these additional gaps, whether it's pre-snap in your alignment or post-snap with options and all these split actions and pullers and things like that. It's built to handle that very well. This defense that Ohio State is running is not. And it's concerning to me. And the message I sent to you was like, how is this causing you this much trouble and you have Wisconsin on your schedule? I don't get it. Wisconsin is in your conference. You see all of these types of things all of the time. It might be with a bunch of tight ends instead of being the spread, but it's the same idea. Like, this isn't something new. Every college defensive coordinator should know that you're probably going to see unbalanced at least one time in the season. So you got to have some kind of answer for it. I was so shocked to see them continually be burnt by the same things over and over again and how easy they made it on Oregon. Yeah. And to your point about Anthony Brown, I'm like, it's not like he was some knockout quarterback. Like, I went and looked at all the 3x1 passes because we have that graded as, like, the worst passing formation. I was like, oh, I see why. Every time he threw the ball to the X, it was awful. The guy was either never open or the ball was horribly thrown or got batted down. Like, they weren't doing anything special.
No, not in the passing game.
That was just disappointing.
I hope no one listens to this because, like, my prediction is like Oregon might still lose two games this year.
I was going to say I don't know where the two.
But it's like they're not. I don't know if they're a great enough passing team to get around some issues that they might have going forward. The one thing I wanted to say, because I made this point earlier and I thought it was a good point, so I'm going to say it, is what they were able to do. We talk about 4x0 unbalanced, but what they were able to do in 3x1. With a tight split X receiver, which was really interesting because, again, they're trying to go to the boundary with that, you know, nub kind of X receiver who's like,
or you get that nasty tackle, split, nasty who's split, a exactly. receiver, but he's standing basically 2 yards outside the tackle, 2-3 yards outside.
I think all three of their short touchdown runs were on this concept where they would crack the linebacker and then they would just run outside. And the cornerback has to crack replace. He's got to crack replace. First of all, he's in man coverage often. Because that's what they're doing. They're playing man coverage. It's Ohio State. So you tell the kid, what if he runs across the field? What if he runs a slant like he did?
Or it's a pop pass.
Or it's a pop pass. Like, what if it's play action and it's an RPO slant, which they had run earlier in the game? So he's not coming off that receiver. And now that receiver is taking 2-for-1 because he's cracking down the linebacker. The cornerback is still in his hip pocket and they get around. So it's like, you would talk about hit, crack replace and all that stuff, but by alignment, by design, they're not able to do that. Okay, before we get out of here, just thoughts because I watched it on the opposite side, which was that CJ Stroud, who we weren't really sure about last week against Minnesota, even though he put up some yards. I thought he looked really good, man.
I thought he threw the ball to the right receivers.
Threw some really fucking nice seam balls, like on the money that got dropped, sure, whatever, but really
you
nice.
You throw that ball. Speed out to the field. Like
they had that all day. Problem. Is he Justin Fields? Maybe not. But my take is that he's going to be better than Dwayne Haskins. So it'll probably be in between those two.
Yep. And I think that I was talking with you and Justice and Richard Johnson and a few of the other guys that we talked to that are colleagues in this field. And I think that's exactly what I said. Where everybody's like, well, what is CJ Stroud really going to be? I was like, they're probably just going to run the same offense that they had with Haskins. And I think that he has enough arm talent to look just as good, if not better. I think that that's what we'll see going forward. And I mean, and it doesn't hurt that you have two top 10, top 15 picks at wide receiver.
Disgusting
outside players. Either.
Absolutely disgusting players. Yeah. Like, Wilson, like Olave is clean at everything. Wilson might not be as clean as a rut runner yet, but his
but it's just as explosive.
It's explosive. Oh my God. Yeah. Speaking of Richard Johnson, you can go read his article on the Oregon offense that kind of ties into exactly what we're talking about on SI.com, I believe. Okay, before we get out of here, that's it. Not before we get out of here. We're done. We're out of here.
right.
So catch us.
Yeah, we'll talk again later this week.
Talking more NFL.
NFL and whatever the top games will be this upcoming week in college ball as well.
Yeah. All right. So stick with us and we'll see you next week. Later this week. Sorry.